Jerry Jones, for all of his faults, told his guys, this is a football game. You want to take a knee, you can find someplace else to work. This is my team. I own it. Have a nice day.
And that's what they need to get back to. It's the whole thing, whether it's politics or racism, whatever, it's got no place in the NFL. It really doesn't. And until the fans start demanding that they'll continue to get away with it, because we no longer have the leadership that we once did. That's what I feel is the country is deteriorating into, this political correct nonsense. You know, at the risk of sounding like a middle-aged, overweight, angry white guy, I've got to tell you about something that really pisses me off. Last Sunday, I was at Wembley Stadium in London for the NFL game and watched Indianapolis Colts cornerback Antonio Cromartie not only take a knee during the national anthem, but raise his fist in the air as the Black Power, Black Lives Matter, or whatever salute. I guess he had the decency then to stand reverently for God Save the Queen. But that just chapped me. Not only the fact that he did it, but he did it in a foreign country. I don't want to see politics on the gridiron. If I want to go see an NFL game, that's what I want to watch, is football, not somebody's individual politics. With me today is my longtime friend and colleague, Master Gunnery Sergeant, retired USMC, Joe Huff. Joe, welcome to the show today. We're going to talk about politics in the NFL, and was he able to do it? Of course he was able to do it. His right is undisputed, but he has every constitutional right to express himself. What I question is the appropriateness of it, and why does the NFL even tolerate such actions? You know, I was really pleased to see the NFL game in Wembley, which, by the way, the NFL has dumped a huge amount of money into marketing in the UK. And, you know, there was a guy with his face painted, wearing a kilt. He's all in blue and white, and I'm figuring he was from Denver. No, he's from Southampton. There were people there wearing jerseys from, you know, all different NFL teams, and half of them were Brits. There wasn't an empty seat in that stadium. And the new Wembley Stadium is just gorgeous.
I'll tell you this, it was amazing to me in Afghanistan, in Kandahar, to sit and talk with a couple Brits and then talk to me about, and this was 10 years ago, was, you know, hey, you know, we've watched your football, well, your American football, I think is what they called it, and we really like it. It's not as good as ours. And, you know, I nodded my head at that and said, okay, you know.
It's a cultural thing.
It is a cultural thing, and you know, it's like watching cricket. To me, watching cricket is like watching paint dry, you know? I mean, but they get into it, and, you know, of course, they're probably feeling the same about American baseball. But, you know, but see, this goes back to what we were talking about. You know, we were raised in the culture that you get your butt up when your national anthem is played, but you also stand up as a sign of respect to your allies and your friends when their songs are played. You know, every hockey game has depending on where it's being played at.
Yeah, at least, you know, Cromartie had the decency to stand for God Save the Queen.
Well, you know, God love him for it, but I'm grinding my teeth at this. But see, here's the problem, Jay, and I think it's an observation rather than a problem. My observation is this, is that over the last 20-odd years, respect for the country as a whole has faded because the commentary has become, I don't want to use the word jaded because that's not strong enough, has become corrupted and debased with this idea that the United States, no matter what it's done, has always been wrong, has always been disrespectful and destructive to all the other cultures.
Eight years ago, Obama started his presidency with his apology tour. That set the tone for it. You know, without wanting to sound real corny, and you know, I remember as a little kid, I mean a little kid in like kindergarten, what a privilege it was for me to hold the American flag.
Oh, absolutely.
During the Pledge of Allegiance each morning, which, you know, I learned before I was in the first grade. It was almost a reverent. It was a reverent thing for me, and I always, from my parents, from school, and, you know, just touring battlefields, Revolutionary and Civil War, just the fact that men were willing to die for the beliefs of this country, you know, and I didn't fully comprehend that as a child, the sacrifice, kind of, sort of, but, you know, as... That was inculcated in me at an early age, and then as I grew and began to, you know, stand at Arlington, that was when Kennedy was assassinated. I was at Arlington for the first time in the Garden of Stone, and it had such a profound impact. I mean, it's one of the reasons that I chose a career in the military.
Well, yeah, I think my background is kind of similar. I mean, I remember... I do not have any memory where I was not either a member of the military family or an active duty military person. And it amazes me still to sit back and talk to people who have never been around the military in their lives and the delusions they have about it. But also, I'm a military brat. I was born in Germany. I've been raised all around the world. I've seen third world crap holes, and yet they have a certain affinity for it. I'm talking, you know, the folks in the third world, you know, they want to come to the U.S. because it's the land of opportunity. They can, you know, live and do and work and everything like that. And then you sit there and you say, well, you know, when do you say the Pledge of Allegiance in school? So we don't do it anymore. Well, why not? Well, we don't want to impose our will on these children. We want them to make their own, form their own opinions. And it goes back to things like, and I got a little off subject because I had a momentary flashback of, you know, of holding the flag in first grade and thinking, what a great thing.
Well, they should have appreciation for the country that's given them so much. I think a lot of natural born Americans don't have the same appreciation as naturalized Americans.
Oh, I agree. I agree. And you know, when Z became a citizen, you know, when I've had friends become citizens, I cry as much as they do because it's like, oh my God, welcome aboard.
Yeah, I've been to swearing-in ceremonies. It's a moving experience.
Absolutely. And the truth is that, you know, when you get to the bottom line with it, we weren't indoctrinated. We were allowed to form our own opinions. But we were told, this is your country. Be proud of it. Be proud of who you are. We saved Europe twice. Three times, actually, if you want to count the Cold War. Mm-hmm. We've spent more of our national treasure and expended more of our national worth in places that the rest of the world said, you know what, you know, let it wither on the vine. Look at Haiti. The American military has been in Haiti as a relief force, not as an occupier, for most of my time in the Marine Corps, and I joined in 77.
The United States can accomplish more with one single aircraft carrier than most nations could supply with their most robust national resources.
You're absolutely right. I mean, you know, you take a look at and look at the, you know, Mount Pinatubo, and you know, the Philippines. And this is my opinion. Duarte is kind of a dolt. If you ever listen to him talk and read his speeches and things like that, but he's a freely elected president of the Philippines. He's not mad at the American people. He doesn't trust the current regime in the United States to support him in what he wants to do and what he needs to do for his country. And that goes back to what we were saying. We have a history of going to countries and helping them and doing for them and not expecting any kind of response other than remember us as your friend.
Speaking of which, having just come back from the UK and talking to a number of Brits who are thankful to Mr. Obama for helping Brexit be so successful by telling another sovereign nation what they should do or should not do and that they were going to go to the back of the line, that just solidified that, yeah, well, we're not going to go the way the rest of Europe is. Thank you, Angela Merkel. That toothpaste will not go back in the tube.
If you get, I snorkeled on my coffee when you said that a little bit. What's funny to me is that if you look at the baseline American response to any kind of authority figure, we thumb our nose at authority left, right, up, and down. And it comes from the fact that we are a nation of immigrants, and we look and our ancestors, and I don't care where you come from, it's hey, we're going to America, you know, and you know, screw you, I'm going to America. And it just makes me laugh because, you know, you hear all these people say, well, we should trust the government, you know, we should trust Mrs. Clinton, you know, we should do this, we should do that. And I laugh at them because they say, when they say that, because we have as a culture thumbed our nose at authority repeatedly.
Born of revolution.
And we didn't put in a dictator. We didn't put in a group of a junta, for lack of a better term, to govern us because we couldn't do it ourselves. What we did was is George Washington said, you know what? I'm done. I've done my part. It's time for us to do what we say we're going to do, and that is put in a government of the people, by the people, and for the people that shall not perish from this earth. But when I see things like Mr. Cromartie and Mr. Kaepernick and even Mr. Obama and Mr. Kerry say things about this country, I'm reminded of my favorite Lincoln quote, where Lincoln pointed out in the 1850s, long before he ever thought about being and I want to say it was 1858, in correspondence to a friend who was a Democrat, that if we are to die, it will be by our own hands. It will be by suicide. And I paraphrase a little of it. And you know, looking at things as they are now, you know, we are the greatest nation that has ever been extant on this planet.
And there's no need to be ashamed of it. There's American exceptionalism. There's a reason for that.
Well, again, it goes back to being a nation of immigrants, where we don't have the traditional, you know, family, clan, tribe, kingdom, whatever you want to apply to it, hierarchy. And to sit back and say that the governmental flaws are because of, and, you know, picking a group is fascist. It's Hitlerian. And there's a reason why we tend to look at extremists and say, well, what is your problem, man? And it's because we tend to seek compromise and tend to make the system work. You know, I've heard people say, you know, your privilege, and you can fill in the blank what they put before privilege, has blinded you to the realities. No, your inability to see things as they really are. Well, there's never been a unified America. Well, yeah, but not unified in that we're all marching in step to a dictator, to a party, to a junta. And you just have to look at Venezuela to see how well that works in the modern.
Ironically, right? I think, you know, for good or bad, wars have unified this country. You look at the divisions post-Civil War. And I think that it finally took the Spanish-American War, where we had soldiers that fought for the blue and the gray that were now serving a single flag, united against a common enemy. Not sure that's something to be proud of, but it's a fact nonetheless. And the flag, you can say it's a piece of cloth, or you can say the anthem is just a song, but it's a symbolism of that unity and that which makes us great as a country. And I think a lot of these jokers that are making, you know, $14 million a year or whatever, they don't know what true oppression is. Do we have racial problems? Oh, we do now, for sure. We took a giant step back to the 1960s, thanks to Obama, who could have brought us even further with race relations. I think he's set us back considerably. But I think we're always going to have race problems. You're never gonna wipe that out entirely.
You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. Well, it's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. You'll find a whole host of shows and a lineup of great content back at AmericaOutLoud.com.
Constitution is not a piece of parchment with scribbles on it. It's a system of government. It's a basis to form a group of people into a government that can do for the citizenry, but the citizens have to participate. But the Constitution is something very near and dear to me.
The fact that it's lasted for over 200 years says something.
Well, you know, You have the people screaming about gay marriage. Well, marriage isn't even addressed in the Constitution. Marriage licenses are an imposition of the state upon their citizenry, the states in of the United States, and it's a revenue. It's a stream of revenue, more than anything else in my mind. But if two men want to get married in New York, of course North Carolina is going to recognize it, just like we recognize their driver's license, just like we recognize everything else. So this whole screaming about it is kind of silly to me. But by the same token, you can't impose your will by saying it's okay to go to another country and badmouth the United States, and we're going to forgive you for it. And turn around and say, well, you know, you can't say that, Joe, because we disagree with you. I mean, freedom of speech is freedom of speech. First Amendment is First Amendment. There's no way around it. It's like, you know, I think it's the Ninth Circuit said that, you know, laws that prohibit open carrying and things like that and you know, ammunition limits and what have you is unconstitutional. Well, we've been saying that for, you know, 50 years.
This whole thing stems from this political correctness. You know,
and that's where I was going.
Going back to the whole NFL thing. Yeah, first of all, the NFL has had a steady decline in viewership. Not implying that it's because of players taking a knee, but they're down. In the critical 18 to 49 year old viewerships,
absolutely,
14%. Monday Night Football is down 19%. Thursday mm-hmm. night viewership is down 15%. So all this comes down to the fans. I'm not the biggest NFL fan in the world. Far from it. I do enjoy the football games. You're paying $25 just to park out in the back 40 on the field. I can park in somebody's yard across the street, pay them $5 or $10, and then go in and, you know, buy my $16 Coke and a hot dog.
Well, you hit the nail on the head with that. I mean, it hasn't helped by any stretch, that's for sure. But you know, when you start looking around, and I don't like pundits, but I do like observers. If you're in commentators, you know, pundits will tell you what you ought to be thinking. Commentators say this is where I stand at. But if you look at the NFL as a whole, you know, when they stopped looking at the NFL as an entertainment a sports program, a sports entertainment thing. And as just a straight show, you know, this is where they started to lose fans. And of course, you know, they didn't learn anything from watching baseball and basketball implode in the 90s. You can't charge somebody, you know, $50 for themselves and then another $100 to bring their two kids with them.
Yeah. And when these players, I mean, Goodell makes something like, you know, short of $50,000 a year just as commissioner. With that kind of salary, I think you'd show a little bit of leadership and intestinal fortitude. You know, he's spoken up, but not significantly. And somebody needs to draw the line. I don't want to watch that crap. I want to see an NFL game. I don't want to see politics on the ball field. If you feel that strongly about Black Lives Matter or whatever your cause may be, go march in the protest. Give up your $114 million contract and go march in the streets of Ferguson and give up all your NFL endorsements for commercials if you feel that strongly about it. But somebody needs to draw a line and say, make a choice.
Well, you got to give up something. You know, there was some insanity down here. Michael Jordan said, hey, look, I'm going to give the same amount of money to, and I want to say it was in Chicago, but it might have been Charlotte. I'm having a senior moment. To both the Police Benevolent Association as well as, you know, the organization supporting the African-American community. And I thought, well, here's a guy who's putting his money where his mouth is. He's not making a political statement. He's saying, look, things need to be fixed. There are things that need to be done. And in doing so, we need to spend some money. And here's some money to spend on it. Got it. Outstanding. You know, but it goes back to how we've elevated these sports figures, just like, you know, we've elevated, you know, movie stars and TV stars. You know, James Caan says, why, you know, when he was asked the political question, he says, why do you ask us these questions? We make our living pretending to be somebody else. What does our opinion matter?
Good point.
And I thought, well, you know, it was the same interview where they asked Gene Simmons, you know, what was the message of Kiss's music? And, you know, his response was, message. We just wanted to make a lot of money and get laid. I mean, you know, and that's honesty. You know, you go and you ask Terry Bradshaw, you know, about football and, you know, about the politics of football, and he's going to look at you and say, well, you know, Chuck Knoll was kind of a butt kicker with me, you know, and yada, yada, yada. And that's what he's going to say is the politics of football, you know. You know, there's no way you were going to see, you know, Joe Montana or Steve Young, for that matter, stand up and say, hey, you know, I'm going to take a knee because, no, his thing was Bill Walsh, and Seifert, in the case of Steve Young, told me that if I don't get my butt on the field, my butt ain't going to be on the field.
Well, I think the fans don't realize what power they hold, much like the voters. You know, the NFL runs off of the fans and the viewers' money, whether it's stuff that they buy at the stadiums or parking for $25 or the ad buys, which have also decreased significantly. The NFL ads are not selling for what they once were. So until the fans start saying, basically, we're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore, that, you know, they'll continue to get away with it. And the fans need to speak up and say, this is BS. I don't want this in my Monday night football. I want to watch football. I didn't tune in to watch some political statement.
Well, you take a look at what was going on in basketball 5 years ago, 10 years ago. People quit going to see the basketball games because there was so much thuggery going on. You know, you got players going up into the stands. I mean, what kind of nonsense was that? And then they saw their revenues falling off, and then they took a stand and said, oh, no, you're not doing this or you'll get suspended. You're not doing this or we're going to really fine the crap out of you. Why you take hockey, for example, and I love talking about hockey as compared to the other professional sports. Hockey players don't go up into the stands. Hockey players don't pick up the puck and throw it out into the stands.
That's because there's plenty of violence on the ice to be found.
Well, you know, I went to a fight and a hockey game broke out. It was terrible. but my point is that, you know, the coach of the team is in a nice suit. He's got a tie on. When he says, sit your butt down and quit acting the fool, they sit down. But let's take it back to football. Mike Tomlin said, you know, you want to be the fool, I'll bench you. You remember when Kaepernick got benched by Jim Harbaugh, and that added to and everybody thought Kaepernick's, you know, was the golden boy of the NFL at the time. He wasn't responding to being coached. So you go ahead, sit down. Well, I'm the quarterback. I'm making $14 million a year. So
for now.
For now. And I think that's why Kaepernick hasn't been cut. There's plenty of and look at the teams and look at the coaches and look at the hierarchy. Jerry Jones, for all of his faults, told his guys, this is a football game. You want to take a knee, you can find someplace else to work. This is my team. I own it. Have a nice day.
And that's what they need to get back to. It's the whole thing, whether it's politics or racism, whatever, it's got no place in the NFL. It really doesn't. And
no.
Until the fans start demanding that they'll continue to get away with it, because we no longer have the leadership that we once did. That's what I feel is the country is deteriorating into, this political correct nonsense.
Well, you've got, and that goes back to something that I've written down here in my notes. You've got a hierarchy in this country, and the Congress is just as culpable for this of some of this as the Obama administration. You know, you've got to be a leader. You've got to stand for something. You've got to say, this is a line. You know, you remember back in the day in basic infantry school. And you were learning how to do fighting positions, and they made you put the sticks up at the corner of your fighting hole, and you were sitting there wondering, I've just dug a 6-foot hole in a water table that's 4 feet. you know?
The life of the infantryman.
the good days, the good times. But I remember my instructor, you know, sitting there and saying, you need to put a stick up on each corner so you know your left and right lateral limits. And I thought, well, why is that? And he says, well, in the dark. Now, these are guys who fought in Vietnam. These are not guys who just went to infantry school, did a couple years, you know, with this battalion or that brigade.
Far more than theory.
Yeah. He says, and I remember one of my instructors said, look, it didn't matter where we were. If we were setting in for the night, we knew where our left and right lateral limits were because we put a stick in the ground. So when we swung that M60, it hit that stick and we knew, oh, this is as far as we can go. And I think that's the problem with this administration and this Congress, and it trickles down. You know, it's one thing to make a political statement by sending the bust of Winston Churchill back to England and saying, you know, hey, we don't like Churchill. And no, Mr. Obama's grandfather was not killed by the Britons during the Mau Mau Rebellion. That's been proven as a fallacy. That's one thing. But to say to all of these people who find the freedom of the United States an anathema, and kowtowing to them and turning to the English or even the French for that matter, and saying, screw you, buddy, you know, we're going to side with these guys in this argument. You know, you've just thrown off any right, left and right lateral limit. The Congress should have stood up and said, now, wait a minute. If the Supreme Court rules that the Affordable Care Act is a tax, that falls directly into our wheelhouse. Mitch McConnell is very much like Harry Reid in my mind, although, you know, I haven't caught Mitch McConnell lying down in the pit of the Congress or of the Senate about somebody's taxes and then coming back and saying later, oh, yeah, I lied, so what? We got Mr. Obama reelected. That was our job. But when you start saying that and doing things, and you look at the constitutional requirements of the Senate and the House, you know, they failed us too as leaders. And I think, you know, on the international stage where the president has to be a leader, Bill Clinton, for all of his faults, and he has many, as we know, at least listen to his generals, particularly in getting O'Grady out of Bosnia. You know, there was he at least turned around and said, go, do the act, do the deed, without waiting 16, 20 hours.
Yes, decisiveness.
The root thing is that if you let the children run around and play and be children, they're going to be children. You have these NFL players who are children. They have arrested development. They've been coddled pretty much their entire lives because of football. And now they don't have anybody. And look at the teams and look at the owners. You know, Jerry Jones, Mike Tomlin as coaches too. All these, the teams, you know, Bill Belichick, and I think the Patriots have got screwed this season because of Tom Brady being gone. That happened last season. It's like double jeopardy. Okay, we're going to let you go this time, but now we're going to hammer you for it.
Well, I think Kraft had a lot to do with Goodell's $44 million a year salary, and I think that's exactly why they went so easy on the Patriots. But
I'm not saying he was guiltless. But I'm looking at it from the perspective of an American who understands the legal system, you know. And Brady probably sat there and said, you know what, and talked to Kraft and talked to Belichick and said, you know what, I'll go ahead and take the 4-game suspension. You know, we got a good backup quarterback, and they look great this year. I mean, let's be honest. And rather than spending all the money on the attorneys and the appeals and all this kind of stuff and going to court, screw it. You know, we'll take the lesser of impact on us as a team and walk. But Belichick wouldn't put up with that. Belichick would have told, and then you take it. You look at oh God, he just the safety for the Patriots, Odell Beckham Jr. He goes and shakes the hand of every soldier in the stadium and thanks them. Was it a political stunt? Was it a publicity stunt? Well, probably. But the rude thing is you're going to catch more flies with honey. And by taking a knee and putting my fist in the air and acting like I'm the oppressed child, 1968 was a long time ago.
Yeah, he's not old enough to understand what oppression truly is.
You know, and you know this, you know, your first time in south of the Mason-Dixon, I mean, I'm talking rural North Carolina in my case, you know, was an eye-opening experience for me. There was oppression in the 70s and probably into the 80s. But nobody thinks it's on towards now to see a mixed, what we would have called a mixed couple in the 70s, in the 80s. Nobody cares. Nobody cares to see two guys holding hands. You know, the culture has changed. In some ways, I think, for the better, because I don't care. I mean, you know, what you do in the privacy of your own home is none of my business. But to sit there and reopen old wounds and say, this is this, and this is this, and this is this, when the reality is that, no, it's not. It is what it is. You know, you want to take a knee during a football game, that's fine. Sit on the bench.
No, that's how I feel about it. I think those people need to separate. You know, they're apples and oranges. You know, I appreciate you having your own personal opinions. Don't drag it into the NFL.
Or into anything. You know, don't drag it onto the college campus and then scream when somebody disagrees with you.
Yeah, I think this is going to have repercussions well into the next generation. I mean, you look at the whole millennial mentality. I'm not going to go as far as saying it's a national security issue, but it has to do with the mentality that's being applied now.
Look at, you know, Coomey's on Mrs. Clinton's, you know, violation of the law. Let's call it what it is. I mean, he admits she violated the law willingly and with malice aforethought, you know. I mean, he lays out, you've written court martial, you know, papers just like I have, and charges and all. To me, that read like an indictment.
It did. Until
and then
the
come
end.
Back and say, well, no prosecutor would touch this. Well, yeah, a lot of them would have. A lot of them would have done that.
They just didn't want to end up face down in Fort Marcy Park.
Well, you know. sitting in your car with not a lot of blood, just, well, shut up, Joe. I'm going to stop now. But you know, but again, you hit the nail on the head. It's the ghost of a lawless regime that looks at the laws and then lawyers their way around it. You know, Nixon had, what was it, 6 minutes missing from a tape, and Rosemary Woods is laughing. you know, and he's forced to resign more than anything else over that gap.
Yeah, and no one died at Watergate as opposed to Benghazi.
Well, no one that we know of, but G. Gordon Liddy says, dot, dot, dot. But, you know, and Liddy has said that. He says, you know, if the Clintons hired me, you know. but really, you take a look at the whole thing about the NFL and all of these things. They're looking at the fact that they're getting away with stuff. Well, why can't I get away and get my name in the paper and keep my seat on the bench with the 49ers or the Patriots or, I'm sorry, not the Patriots, you know, the Colts? Well, obviously you can't do it on the Colts because, you know, the Colts hierarchy's not going to put up with that nonsense either. And I think what bothers me the most is how not just the players, but the sports commentators mealy-mouth it. I've stopped watching ESPN, and I was a big fan of Mike and Mike in the Morning. I loved listening to Mike and Mike, but I don't anymore.
Oh, it's the tolerance of, the, you know, you talked about the thuggery. Look back at Plaxico Burress. Do you want to play for the NFL or do you want to be a gangster? You know, you make millions of dollars a year, buy a freaking holster. The guy came short of circumcising himself or could have bled out from the femoral artery. Simple solution, buy a holster or just enjoy your millions of dollars and don't feel compelled to be a thug.
What's the sign I cannot remember the TV series, but they showed it quite often during the series. I want to say it was Breaking Bad, you know, how about a nice cup of shut the hell up. I have my opinions, and I like sharing them, absolutely. But the bottom line is you have to be an adult, and you have to pick your battles. And I agree with Shaquille O'Neal. What's the difference between this year and last year?
A year.
You know, exactly. You know, you have, you know, and I can't remember the count. I want to say it's almost 1,000 people killed in Chicago under Rahm Emanuel's regime. And they say, oh, that's not a good comparison. You're comparing apples and oranges. Okay, then what are we comparing it to? Well, black guys can't walk down the street and not get hassled by the cops. Well, my response to that is yes, you're right, and it's a damn shame, and they should be able to walk down the street. But by the same token, the first two people killed after the Ferguson thing in New York City was an Asian guy and a Hispanic guy who happened to be cops. Where's Black Lives Matter in that? Where are all these organizations in that? Because we're not talking about, you know, white Irish cops in New York City or white Italian cops in Chicago. We're talking about cops in general.
And then perpetuating these myths that, you know, there was a black man that was shot in the back several times. They had video of it. You know, I'm sure the cop was prosecuted. But I thought, now here's something that should be on the news. But no, they're sensationalizing criminals that had guns or were trying to take a gun away from the police officer. You talk about picking your fights. You know, if you're going to protest, pick the right thing to protest.
Well, I used the historic reference during that whole period of time with the whole Michael Brown thing, and the historical reference was Horst Wessel in Nazi Germany. You know, the Nazis held him up as this huge, you know, fighter against the communists and you know protector of Germanic, you know, purity and things like that. And the truth was, he was a pimp that got killed by another pimp over a prostitute, and I want to say in Hamburg. But don't quote me on that. I can't remember which German city. But that's the facts were that it was one of those things where you had two criminals, one shot the other, And you know, the German police actually wrote it off as a public service. But the Nazis of the city, because Mr. Vessel was a member of the Nazi party, got held up as this paragon of virtue. The case I think you were talking about was either in Charlotte or Charleston. I want to say it was in Charlotte. Or no, I'm sorry, in Charleston. And the guy was immediately arrested, you know, processed, found guilty, and was you know, was basically fired from the police department. But to see that it doesn't sell papers.
Right. It's like, release the tapes. Okay, the tapes are released. What are you protesting for now? Oh, no, it's just an excuse to break bad and riot and loot.
Well, exactly. And you know, when you have somebody from the NAACP on, and we're talking about the recent shooting of the guy up here in Charlotte that led to, you know, the Governor McCrory, and there's a lot to be said for that and the political things going on there. You'll notice that's gotten really quiet. But, you know, it turns out, you know, the guy has a history of violence and he did have a gun. But the NAACP rep says it doesn't matter whether he had a gun or not. The police shouldn't have shot him. Well, does the police officer not have the right to expect to go home that night to his family?
Apparently not.
The chief of police in Dallas, he ought to be running for president. I'd vote for him in a heartbeat.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll get Del Wilber on to talk about this whole. I mean, he's personal friends of the former police chief in Ferguson, and being a cop of many years and a retired intelligence officer.
I listen to that because, you know, for me personally, and I look at it from a Marine infantryman's perspective, because you'll never get that out of my system. Things are black and white. It either is good or bad. If it's bad, drop it and leave it side the road. If it's good, pick it up and put it in your ruck and carry it with you. People aren't inherently bad. Color of skin is immaterial. It's the guys to the left and right of you you've got to learn to depend on. And if you can't, then get rid of them and gain new friends. I mean, it's that simple. And to sit and condemn an entire group of people. We were taught that as kids, you know. Look at people as good, and if you've got somebody bad, stay away from them. You remember the Golden Rule?
The Golden Rule. What was that about?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's a scary thought. You know, do unto others. And I was watching Blue Bloods the other day, and I love watching the show because on the Tiffany Channel, you have a group of Irish Catholic cops who tend to do the right thing, and they're religious. I mean, it just kind of is a. Is in a, and of course, you know, Tom Selleck has risen in my esteem since Magnum PI because he is a staunch constitutionalist and a supporter of the Second Amendment, and therefore a supporter of the First Amendment. And every great religion, and I don't care what religion it is go out and treat people better than you treated them yesterday, and treat people as you want to be treated. And we fail miserably at that. And people scream about Sharia law, and we're going off on a tangent. Well, if Sharia law was so great, why didn't they stay in a country that Sharia law is the law of the land? All right, Jay, this is a good talk. We haven't talked like this in a while.
I know, next time we do this, I enjoy it. We
need to either sit in front of some coffee or sit in front of a couple fingers of scotch, just a touch of branch water in it.
That would do it.